And you're listening to 89.3 KPCC. A very good afternoon to you. I'm Larry Mantle. We're on with a very abbreviated air talk to discuss the impeachment hearings held today on Capitol Hill. You just heard NPR talk about the two participants, U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, David Holmes, who was at the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, and Fiona Hill, National Security Council Russia expert, talk about their experiences related to this impeachment inquiry. If you want to share your questions or comments, you can do it on our AirTalk page, kpcc.org. And we just heard mention of NPR's ongoing coverage. It will resume with All Things Considered right after Take Two this afternoon. And then we have a very special 5 o'clock NPR hour-long special report on the impeachment hearings on Capitol Hill. Joining us now is Michael Isikoff, chief investigative correspondent with Yahoo News. He covered the Clinton impeachment process, wrote a highly influential book uncovering Clinton 20 years ago on that, and in fact was a guest on our program talking about that book. Michael, it's good to have you with us again.
Good to be back.
So here we are once more, 2 decades later. So let's talk about today specifically. What was the biggest impression you got from the testimony of the two witnesses?
These were two very good witnesses, very strong, clearly experts in their field, extremely knowledgeable. And, I don't think they added a whole lot to the actual evidence against the president, but they did, there were some memorable moments. I thought that Fiona Hill describing the confrontation that she had with
Gordon Sondland,
the big witness yesterday, in which she blows up at him because she thinks he's meddling in the Ukraine policy when he has no business doing so and pursuing objectives that haven't been approved by the National Security Council. Her line is he was involved in a domestic political errand.
Well, can you hold that thought, Michael? Let's listen to that clip.
And what I was angry about was that he wasn't coordinating with us. Now, I actually realise, having listened to his deposition, that he was absolutely right, that he wasn't coordinating with us because we weren't doing the same thing that he was doing. So I was upset with him that he wasn't fully telling us about all of the meetings that he was having. And he said to me, but I'm briefing the president. I'm briefing Chief of Staff Mulvaney. I'm briefing Secretary Pompeo, and I've talked to Ambassador Bolton. Who else do I have to deal with? And the point is, we have a robust interagency process that deals with Ukraine. It includes Mr. Holmes. It includes Ambassador Taylor as the chargé in Ukraine. It includes a whole load of other people. But it struck me yesterday when you put up on the screen Ambassador Sondland's emails and who was on these emails, and he said, these are the people who need to know, that he was absolutely right. Because he was being involved in a domestic political errand. And we were being involved in national security foreign policy. And those two things had just diverged.
So, Mike, you can pick up your point from there, please.
Yeah, look, when she starts out giving that explanation, it sounds a bit bureaucratic, like you're not going through proper procedures and you're not coordinating with us. But when she delivered that line, he was being involved in a domestic political errand. That was the stinging blow there, because that was a new formulation of what we've been getting testimony about for the last 2 weeks now. I think it landed. It hit home for a lot of people. He was involved in a domestic political errand on behalf of the president. We, Fiona Hill, John Bolton, others in the National Security Council, and in the State Department, thought what they were doing was formulating national security, foreign policy, and she said those two things had just diverged.
So here we have multiple witnesses over the course of the week who have laid out the impression of President Trump giving orders to demand the quid pro quo, to have a meeting with him first, later for the release of $400 million in military aid to Ukraine, that Ukraine publicly announce an investigation into the 2016 election potential Ukrainian interference and Burisma, the gas company on which Hunter Biden sat on its board. What we don't have, though, Michael, seems is someone like a Rudy Giuliani who would say the president directly told me this is what to do. And is that much of a hole, as you see it, in the Democratic argument for impeachment? Or are, with so many others getting the same impression, does that carry sufficient weight?
Yeah. In some ways, this is like Watergate in reverse. During Watergate, we had a year and a half of congressional investigations, FBI investigations that culminated with the smoking gun tape, Nixon ordering that the CIA be used to interfere with the FBI investigation into the Watergate burglary. In this matter, we started with the smoking gun. We had the transcript of the president's own words. I want you to do me a favor, though, and then specifically asking President Zelensky to investigate the Bidens. If you're looking for what the president's intent was, what the president's words were, we had it 2 months ago. And everything that's happened since is sort of filling in how we got there and what happened afterwards. But the most damning evidence against the president remains what he himself released when he released that transcript. Now, that said, there are some missing, there are some gaps in the testimony. Chairman Schiff has repeatedly said that the aid, you know, Republicans have pointed to the fact that on September 11th, the aid got released. Therefore, no harm, no foul. It was only temporarily suspended. Schiff's point is that was the date that the White House knew that the whistleblower complaint had been forwarded to the Congress. And as he said repeatedly, they got caught. You get no points for getting caught and then stopping the crime, as it were. It would be nice if we had more direct evidence about the decision to release the hold on the military aid, because we also know that leading members of Congress were pressuring the White House at that time to release the aid, Senators Johnson, Senator Portman, and others. So was it because the president had been informed that the whistleblower complaint had gone to Congress and that's what motivated the release of the funds, or was it the congressional pressure? That may not change the underlying fact that they suspended the aid in the first place because they wanted, because the president wanted these investigations. But it does sort of, it would be helpful to know, if you're trying to tell the complete story here, that's one unanswered question that we don't have testimony for about.
Michael, thanks so much for spending this time with us. I know you're very busy writing about today's events. Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward, hopefully, to talking with you in the coming weeks.
Anytime.
I appreciate it. Michael Liskov, Yahoo News, chief investigative correspondent, covered the Clinton impeachment process and author of the book Uncovering Clinton. Also joining us is Sean Walsh, Republican political analyst. Sean, thank you for being with us. So what did you think of today, particularly after sort of yesterday's highly climactic day?
Well, I actually thought Dr. Hill was terrific, and I think that America learned that we have terrific civil servants and government employees that do a great, great job. I don't think we really learned much new of anything, number one. Number two, I would argue that even though there is interagency working groups and processes, when you are the duly elected president of the United States, you're the one who sets your foreign policy. You're the one who decides how you want to communicate with foreign governments. So even though I think it's unwise and foolish and very risky not to use your interagency working group and your National Security Council, it's not inappropriate. It may be dumb, but it's not inappropriate and it's not illegal. And so I think nothing has changed, Larry, after all of the testimony this week. I think the Democrats are going to vote to impeach. I think the Republicans are still out and probably will vote to acquit. They're going home for a week and a half. So I think that the members are going to take the temperature And if the public doesn't rise up and demand that Republicans out of those impeach him, I think
we just lost Sean on our connection there. We'll try and get him back. Also with us, Amanda Renteria, the president of Emerge America, a national organization that works to identify and train Democratic women who are seeking to run for higher office. She was the national political director for Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. Amanda, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. So not clear if this is the end of the process in terms of hearings in the House and we move to, more soon. What do you think this likely sets up in the weeks to come?
I think that as everyone looks back on the week, and certainly as Adam Schiff closed out his closing testimony, indicated that they could be ready now. And there's no doubt that the end of it, with Fiona Hill's clarity of what has gone on, naming domestic political errands, I think really lays out the case. And so Adam Schiff has to make the case whether or not he can bring any of Rudy Giuliani or any Mick Mulvaney, the closest group of folks in to testify, or whether to make the decision to move forward. And I have to say, given the full course of this week, and as you think through everyone that came forward and the consistency of what they said, with then a clear way of describing it by Fiona Hill, I can see him saying, let's move forward with this before we get into the holidays. We have enough now. But we'll see how these next couple of, these next cycles go and what we hear. But listen, this was a strong, strong case with a lot of consistency here today.
The Washington Post reporting just a short time ago, there was a meeting today between Republican senators, a group of them, with White House staff to talk about planning for a Senate trial. And that there is strong sentiment apparently on the part of the Republican senators to try and confine this to a 2-week period of time, that according to the Post reporting, this would be long enough to show it's a serious trial, but not so long to drag this out over an extended period. And then the question would be, how much of a defense would the president put on, would be put on his behalf in the trial? Your thoughts about, strategically for both parties, what would be the advantage in a particular length of time? Amanda?
I think for Republicans, they want this to go away as fast as possible. I mean, what you saw this week was every single time they got quieter and quieter, or they didn't address the witness. And from their perspective, listen, you want as much time as possible to get your candidates through the primary for all political purposes of this campaign. They'd like it to close. I also think there's a case to be made here for Democrats. I think they understand that right now they have really witnesses that have laid out the case. They know that the American public goes away during the vacations. And so do they have a moment right now where they really have captured the sentiment? You're seeing it in polling. It's going in the right direction. I think both of them are probably asking the question, is now the time? And so you could see this close out, especially as you start to see the shutdown and a couple of other things that happen at year end that actually do require their attention as well. So there's a lot to be said, but I think it couldn't have gone better for Adam Schiff and how he laid everything out this week. And I think you are seeing really the Trump administration and what's happening in the White House debating on what do they do now. They also want it to end.
Regardless of what you think of the content of Adam Schiff's closing, he did that all with no apparent notes. That lengthy close summing up his perspective. Amanda, thank you very much, President of Emerge America. Sean, back with us after we lost his phone line. So, Sean, you said you think nothing's changed in terms of it's going to go to the Senate. There'll be a trial there. What if you had, let me throw a hypothetical, a Rudy Giuliani who at some point said, President Trump told me explicitly that the money should be withheld, meetings should be withheld, conditional to the Bidens being investigated. Do you think that would change the views of any leading Republicans?
I don't think it would if he said what you said, Larry. Now, if there were some other elements involved where he was getting money from other Ukrainian government sources or promising money for other parties, that changes the dynamic to a certain extent. But as I mentioned, I think the die is cast. The Democrats put their case forward. I don't think there was enough of really any blockbusters that wasn't already leaked out in the closed sessions to change a lot of Republican minds. And by the way, if some of these Republicans turn against the president in the proceedings, there is severe political consequences, because even though Trump's base is still with him at 39%, that 39% is rabid in many respects. I think they would take it out on them, and 25 of those senators are up for re-election in this election cycle.
Sean, thanks so much. Appreciate your being with us. Republican political analyst Sean Walsh, former advisor to Governors Pete Wilson and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and on the White House staffs for Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC, a very abbreviated program taking you up to Take Two and A. Martinez at 2 o'clock. I'll be back in a minute. Reminder at 5 o'clock this afternoon, a full hour NPR special report on the impeachment inquiry hearings today. You'll hear it live right here on 89.3 KPCC. Take Two is fewer than 10 minutes away. We're going to quickly provide some legal analysis, as we've just done on the political side of things. My pleasure to welcome Dan Caldwell, professor of political science at Pepperdine. We'll have a legal guest coming up momentarily. Professor, thank you for joining us. Biggest significance of today's testimony?
Well, I think it was significant because we had yet again two more public servants who had direct knowledge of the president in David Holmes' case and of the National Security Advisor and Ambassador Sondland in the case of Dr. Hill.
And do you think anything, particularly with yesterday's testimony, changes for Democrats in their strategy at this point?
I think the one thing that does change was the very significant testimony of Ambassador Sondland yesterday, of indicating that the people who knew about the quid pro quo included most of the major foreign policy advisors and officials in the Trump administration.
We had testimony, and in fact, if we can play that clip, about how Burisma, the company, was interpreted by members of the State Department staff in Kiev.
Ambassadors Volker and Sondland have tried to draw a distinction between their understanding of the connection between Burisma and the Bidens. But Dr. Hill, was it apparent to you that when President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, or anyone else was pushing for an investigation into Burisma, that the reason why they wanted that investigation related to what President Trump said here, the Bidens?
It was very apparent to me that that was what Rudy Giuliani intended, yes, intended to convey that Burisma was linked to the Bidens, and he said this publicly, repeatedly.
And Mr. Holmes, you also understood that Burisma was code for Bidens?
Yes.
So there, Fiona Hill and David Holmes responding to, that was counsel for the Democrats, Daniel Goldman, asking that question. So Dan Caldwell of Pepperdine, do you think this lays out an impeachable case against President Trump, that he explicitly was withholding $400 million in aid and withholding a meeting with him at the White House in exchange for the public pronouncement by the Ukrainian government that they would be investigating Burisma and interference in the 2016 election?
I think it does. And the irony is that in 2016, the Russians quite clearly intervened into the American elections. And in 2020, President Trump was inviting a foreign country, that is Ukraine, to intervene into American elections by investigating the Bidens.
Let's listen to another portion of today's impeachment inquiry hearing. Michael Turner, Republican congressman from Ohio, sums up the GOP's position on the testimonies laid out over these 2 weeks of the hearing, that it's based on what the GOP says is hearsay, and that even if there was a quid pro quo, that it wasn't security aid, only a meeting that was being withheld.
But so far in this hearing, in this series of hearings, the only thing that we have is Volker saying, I spoke to the president and I've spoke to the Ukrainians, neither of which believed that aid was conditioned, neither of which believed that the president was requiring it. And Ambassador Sondland, which said no one on the planet told him that that was the case. That's the sole evidence. Now, I got to tell you, the one thing that's interesting is Ambassador Sondland did say it's his belief that a meeting with the president was conditioned upon investigations. Ambassador Volker, who I think is a man of very significant integrity, said that that was not the case. Now, even if Ambassador Sondland is correct that somebody, and Dr. Hill, you testified, and again, it's hearsay, you don't know, that supposedly Mulvaney told him that, because he didn't testify to that. But let's say somebody beside the president told him that. You guys want to be the laughingstock of history to impeach a president of the United States because he didn't take a meeting? Oh, please, dear God.
So your response to that, Dan Caldwell.
Yeah, I think Representative Turner should be very careful about talking about who's going to be the laughing stock of history. In fact, if we go back to the Watergate hearings, it was the Republicans who stepped forward to recognize the wrongdoing of President Nixon, who are now in the history books as the heroes of that time. And I'm thinking particularly of Republican Senator Howard Baker, who stepped up and really, I think, took the lead in terms of questioning the illegal actions of President Nixon.
Dan Caldwell, political science professor, Pepperdine, thank you, sir, for being with us. Our pleasure to welcome Barbara McQuaid, University of Michigan law professor and former U.S. attorney for Eastern District of Michigan. Professor McQuaid, thank you very much. Given what we've heard over the past 2 weeks, do you think the legal case has been made strongly enough by Democrats that the president should be impeached?
Well, I think that's a question that really ought to come down to this. I think that one of the things that we've seen is, do you believe the facts? Which version of the facts? And I think that as Republicans persist in the idea that there was no quid pro quo, they tend to lose credibility, especially after the testimony we heard today from Fiona Hill and David Holmes, that made it, I think, quite clear that there was a quid pro quo. Now the question is, does that mean it's impeachable? You know, when a prosecutor looks at the facts of a case, there are actually two questions that have to be answered. Number one is, was a crime committed? And I think here you can say that there was. Bribery is defined as demanding a thing of value in exchange for the performance of an official act. So demanding the investigations in exchange for the military aid in the White House meeting, I think, fits that legal definition. But then you're not done. The second task that a prosecutor has is to say, even if we can charge a crime here, should we do that? Is there a substantial federal interest that will be advanced by filing criminal charges? And I think that's the question that members of Congress ought to be asking themselves. If they are acting in good faith, the question isn't whether some improper conduct occurred here. I think it absolutely occurred. The question is it in the best interest of the country to file impeachment charges here, to file those articles? And you look at all the things like, if we don't, are we sending a message that this kind of behavior is tolerable in a president? And forevermore, we can expect presidents to engage in similar behavior and we'll not be able to hold them accountable. We also should say, what are the harmful effects on our country? If we are pursuing impeachment proceedings, that means that we're not doing other things like working on health care and gun control and infrastructure and other things. What does this do to our stature in the world as we air our dirty laundry in the public about the way we do business? So I think all of those things have to be decided. But to me, the abuse is significant. And if I had a vote, I would vote to impeach.
Professor McQuaid, appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much. From University of Michigan, Barbara McQuaid, law professor with us on a very abbreviated Air Talk, just a half hour, taking you up to take 2 minutes away here on 89.3 KPCC. And it's our regular schedule tomorrow. So we'll be on with Air Talk 10 o'clock. We'll have Film Week coming up at 11 o'clock. Some big films tomorrow, including reviews of Frozen 2, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Tom Hanks stars as Mr. Rogers, and Knives Out, starring Daniel Craig and Chris Evans. Have a terrific afternoon. Take 2 is next.